Today's show, presented by 5-Star Fans. The thrill, the heartbreak, the pride, being a fan is a wild ride. With 5-Star Fans, you can finally get in on the action like never before. Go to 5-starfans.com right now. Sign up. You can give $5 to your favorite Buckeye. Pretty good deal, Tim.
Yeah.
5-starfans.com right now. You can give $5 to your favorite Buckeye. Help them with the NIL front.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans, college football playoff fans across the nation and around the world. This is Tim May with the Tim May Show with my regular co-pilot, Matt Wilhelm. Matt, we're just days away from Ohio State taking on Oregon in a rematch of their regular season game, but more importantly, in a quarterfinal game of the college football playoff. And a lot of people think these are the two best teams left in this playoff. You're a man who was part and parcel captain, et cetera, on a team that won the national championship at Ohio State in 2002. You know about big games. You were part of a Super Bowl winning Green Bay Packer team way back in the other decade, two decades ago. What's going on in these players' minds right now, man, is just, you know, basically hours away from playing the biggest game of their life so far.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure a lot, you know, and I think, you know, managing family who's probably coming in yesterday, today, so their time that they're going to put into their craft and in preparation, I think is very strategic, both by the players and the coaches. I also want to talk about, you know, just briefly, like the circumstances of, as you talked about, my national championship. It was be at your best one time and go win that one football game. Yeah. And then on the flip side, as you talk about, you know, the blessing of, you know, being on a Super Bowl winning championship team and being a sixth seed, which is the lowest seed at that time to get into the playoffs and having to go road game, you know, neutral site Super Bowl. And, but having to be your best three times to then have that opportunity to play for a Super Bowl. And in this case, a national championship, it's unique. And I think the encouraging part about our Buckeyes with, again, leading into Tennessee, the last time we had saw them was against that team up north, and we didn't all have the best feeling. And there were a lot of words coming out of Columbus. There were a lot of words coming out of, you know, the players and coaches' mouths about what that game was or and how it affects them, who they are now, you know, weeks removed from it, and then the performance. And I think, you know, we talked about it a couple of times in two shows in between the Michigan game and that Tennessee game. And yep. I think if, gosh, as we talked about after the fact, if that football team shows up, the explosive, loose, angry, aggressive, both coach and player setup. You know, I don't want to say there's no way we lose to Oregon, but that's a team that, again, makes us the scariest football team left in this tournament. And you know, I said that after Tennessee. I said yeah. It again. I still feel the same way. And that's what's rumbling in these guys. Because anytime there's more than 7 days, you know, between games, which kind of knocks you just a little bit off schedule, your body and your mind are just ready to play. You're trying to put the excitement and the nervous and the anxiety and the stresses that comes from the game planning and like learning your opponent. At some point, you can't watch any more film. And at some point, you know, running that same route that you've run X amount of times in those 10 or 11 days, plus you probably have run it throughout the football season, you can't run it anymore. You know, you're ready to go do it when it matters. And I think that's what's exciting about this is the last time that we saw our Buckeyes, they looked like the number one team, you know, in college football. And in this case, they get to prove it against a team that is the number one football team in college football and had beaten us by a point, you know, on their football field a few months ago.
It's really funny because we had a big mass as we're recording, we had a big mass interview with first the Oregon team and then Ohio State, you know, basically brought most of their team to the big mass interview. And I'm looking around that Ohio State room and I'm seeing JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer and Will Howard obviously has played at, I think, at a great level, high level this year. And the two running backs, Quinshon Judkins and Trayvon Henderson and Jeremiah Smith over there and Emeka Egbuka over there and Carnell Tate, and then I can name you all the starting offensive linemen if I can remember this week's starting lineup, right?
Right.
But I mean, Donovan Jackson, one of the great linemen who's played at Ohio State, and boy, you know what a role he's played, switching from guard to left tackle, and then just playing at a super high level. And I'm just going, that's just the you know, that's just the stars in this group, and it just hit me again. This is a really maybe who knows, in modern times, this may be a one of a time, lifetime roster that they put together for this team. They didn't achieve like everybody thought they would in the regular season, but there is a sense that after that Tennessee game, going into that Tennessee game, they understood what they were all about. They understood they only had, you win that game and you're done, as I call it, the yes. one, W-O-N, or done. And I think it's permeated this team, and there's something to be said for that, isn't there?
There absolutely is. And I think that, you know, when you're backed into a corner, you know, in some cases, if you are the alphas, if you are the hyper-talented, if you are the elite that Ohio State, you know, is year in, year out, and the way that they recruit and the way that they develop, you punch your way out of that corner. You know, you're just not going to stay there and take the punches from any team. And I think what we saw against Tennessee is that when we are firing on all cylinders, I mean, Chip Kelly got rolling with the play calls and Will Howard got rolling with the completions. And we saw, you know, Jeremiah Smith take the top off the defense, which is going to be the scariest sight again for any defensive back or any defensive back or defensive coordinator in these remaining football games, is what Jeremiah Smith can do. And I think looking back on that Oregon football game and studying, you know, how they played Jeremiah Smith, you know, in his infancy, what, 5 or 6 games into his college football career at that point, and now he's, you know, double and then some in experience, how we used him as a chess piece to get him those targets down the field. But then also Ibuka and Carnell Tate and G Scott on some of the, you know, some of the play actions, you know, moving that pocket just slightly. Cause I do believe, look, you know, kind of remembering back to that Oregon game, we were pretty straight drop back, Will Howard in the pocket, looking to deliver that football from a pocket, which Oregon's defense and defensive line is very aggressive. They got after him, I think, a few sacks, you know, here and there, especially late. And so to move that pocket and get Will Howard on the run, I think, you know, looking at this football game in preparation for this call, in preparation just for what's going to come in this big matchup, is I think it's going to come down to the two quarterbacks. Two things they're very good at is they're both extremely efficient, right? They don't throw a lot of interceptions. You know, I think 28 touchdowns for Gabriel. I want to say 31 for maybe Will Howard, 6 INTs for Gabriel, and I think maybe 8 or 9 for Will Howard as well. And so they both take care of the football. They both complete it at a very high percentage, which means they've got great players out, you know, at receiver, and they've got a defensive, or I mean, an offensive coordinator that calls the game very well. But the one big caveat, I think, as it pertains to both of them, is they're both plus athletes, and who extends the plays with their athleticism and with taking off and running the football. And the defense is being aware of that and keeping them in the pocket or minimizing some of those gains with their legs, because we've talked about all year, for me as a defensive player, it's debilitating. You've worked hard on first and second down. You've got him in 3rd and 8. The coverage is great. You flush him out of the pocket, and then he escapes and evades and runs to the sideline, gets the 9 yards, gets out of. So you don't even get to hit him. He gets the first down, and then you got to line up and do it all over again. And it's very defeating for a defense. So I believe that which of the two quarterbacks maintain the efficiency they throw it at to their playmakers, because Oregon's got great playmakers as well. But then I think who can extend and go get that first down or two with their legs at big moments in the football game.
Yeah, I mean, I've likened Dillon Gabriel. I call him a sneaky runner, because just when you think you've got him, or just when you think the play is broken down, he sneaks out for 5 or 8 or 6 yards, keeps the drive going. And then, of course, in my opinion, as I look back on that game, a lot of things went wild or crazy in that football game at Oregon back on October the 12th. But his 27-yard touchdown run off an option keeper, which he hadn't kept all day. You understand what I'm saying? And he goes basically untouched. That was a backbreaker, because that was I looked at it in a game that came down to 1 point. That was such a bonus touchdown when it happened for them. And that's what he presents. We know Will can run. Will ran quite a few times against Tennessee, tried to run a little bit against Michigan, but he's more of an expected, I don't know how to explain it to you. I think you're going to expect him to run a little bit more, and some of it may even be designed. But that's kind of like the difference I see between these two quarterbacks. But they've both been, I mean, from number standpoint, like you pointed out, they're very close, you know, they're very close in completion percentage. And they both had really good games in that first set too. It's just the final 40 seconds for Will Howard with the offensive pass interference call against Jeremiah Smith. That drive was going right down the field. They were probably going to score in some form or fashion. Everything got just blown up, right? And I talked to both of these guys about the power of visualization. And I think it's enhanced because both these guys practice it, but it's enhanced when you've played somebody before we did. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but you know what they like to do. Now you know they're going to try to change some of the things they like to do, but you have in your brain where their secondary likes to go, what their linebackers like to do, where they like to bring pressure with the defensive front. I mean, that's a bonus, right?
It absolutely is a bonus. I think the other bonus, besides having played each other in a prior game or the defense in a prior game, I mean, both of these guys are transfer guys. So therefore, you know, Dylan Gabriel's got 50 plus starts under his belt. Will Howard probably has 30 plus now. So yeah. Their strengths in their game has probably evolved as they've developed. They've always been, you know, Will Howard's been a plus runner and a pocket passer with a big arm. And Dylan yes. Gabriel's been that, you know, that hyper athletic quarterback who can, you know, throw on the run, but also can stand in the pocket and throw. But as an undersized guy, you know, they like to move him around because he's such a great athlete. So they've seen, you know, in their careers, my point, a lot of different looks, a lot of different stunts, coordinators attempting to keep them in the pocket or maybe attack their throwing arm, which makes them flush to their, you know, away from where they want to flush or escape and then throw across their body. But they've been there and done that. And I think that's one thing that I'm sure Ohio State, not only looking back on our football game, but the games maybe since and the defensive coordinator's approach. And is there, because in the NFL and in college football, there's great minds, you know, Nick Saban and the lineage of defensive guys that have come from him and offensive guys that have come from Belichick and defense and so on. It's like, it's a copycat league, you know? So while Jim Knowles is going to have the core of who we are and what we do and things that we've done in the past that we're going to attempt to run, we're going to look back on some of their past four or five opponents and things that have frustrated Dylan Gabriel, things that have frustrated, you know, this offense, things that have stymied them maybe. And that's, you know, that's Ty Leek and JTT and Sawyer, you know, stunting and Ty moving.
Hamilton. Yeah.
And Ty Hamilton just, you know, playing super physical up front. And it's going to be, you know, marry those looks together, you know, maybe even some, you know, some stemming from a three down to a four down or four down to a three down. And then, you know, maybe you bring pressure. It's going to be, as I said, I've really have kind of approached the all hands on deck, no stone left unturned, really from an offensive standpoint. And that was really coming from how vanilla we kind of looked against Michigan. And we saw that flip on its head, you know, props to Ryan Day and that staff against that Tennessee. But I also think Jim Knowles, like there's like, leave no bullets left in the gun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because if you do it at the high level that they're capable of doing it at, I think you maintain winning this football game, knocking off the undefeated number one football team, but you are even more so the scariest football team left in the tournament because you've got, you know, we've already beat Penn State, you know, you've got Boise. What happens with Arizona State and Texas is going to be up in the air. You know, then you look at Georgia without Carson Beck, you know, and a Notre Dame football team that we had, you know, beaten the last 2 years and we're even more talented. So it sets the table appropriately for you to be uber confident playing with that chip because of what our own, I mean, the Buckeye Nation and the fan base has been up in arms because of what that Michigan game means to our state and means to our fan base and should mean to the players and coaches. But you came up short and you're undoing that slowly, with a win against Tennessee and even more so with a win against Oregon.
Hey, I want to ask you this, man. I don't know if I even asked you this during the season, you know, because you and I talked so many times and said so many things, but, when you're playing on a defense that's playing the way Ohio State has played really since the Oregon game, since they basically simplified a few things, but got really intent on leaving a safety high now. So you don't leave Denzel Burke necessarily out on a total island, you know, as I said, an island the size of Australia, but you, cause you played on one. I mean, at the end of the year in 2002, the reason I picked y'all to beat Miami.
Oh, you picked us? Or that was Tim May who didn't pick us.
Yeah, not Mark May.
Mark May, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
That's an inside joke, ladies and gentlemen, between me and Matt. But we got that straightened out really fast, didn't we, Matt?
Yeah, now we see each other every week. Yes, of course.
Yeah, but the point was, the reason I picked you, the reasons I gave on radio and TV and then even in the newspaper, was y'all's defense. Because it was underrated, I think, unheralded based on all those stars on the Miami side. We turns out that by the NFL draft standards, y'all had as many as they did. But
we did.
But what I wanted to ask you was, when that defense really got rolling that year, I've always thought watching y'all, and I think watching this defense the last, what, 7 or 8 games, they look like they're having fun playing defense. And you don't always connect those two, you know, because you're just one play away from getting waxed, right? But
of course,
do you see a defense that's understands how good it is and is playing with fun?
Absolutely. I think one other point that I heard statistically that I had not even recognized, and I don't think we've mentioned it between the two of us, is the last time this defense has given up a passing touchdown was against the Oregon Ducks.
Yes.
So that's something to be said statistically. And I will say what happens to get to your question is there's a moxie and a swagger and confidence that comes from maybe giving up 30 plus points on the road, losing a game the way you did. You work really, really hard to go fix that. And then when that fixing is working, and when the players are making plays, and it's not just one guy, you know, not on this defense, you know, it's Igmanosin 1 week and it's Enzo Burke the next week, and it's Jack Sawyer has a party at the quarterback next week, it's JTT. And then, the inside guys, you know, give up no yard. They get no pushback. They can't run the football. So it's very suffocating. And I think that's where in 2002, we were a little bit different. So like we just were, I feel like we were kind of like a lunch pail crew, right? We didn't realize how great we were. We just went out and did what we did is because the style, you know, and I'll use trestle ball, which I don't throw out there very often, but like it was, we knew our offense was limited, you know, from an explosive standpoint. It was going to be run the football, play action pass, strategic, you know, comebacks to Michael Jenkins and Gamble and Chris Vance and so on. It wasn't going to be high octane. Yeah. So we knew we had to minimize the scoring and basically get the football back to our offense. And in many cases, it could be shoot just to, you know, get a first down and then punt it, pin them deep. And then when we pin them deep, we get, you know, 2 first downs and get the ball back. We're in field goal territory and field, you know, and we'll shoot win 3-0. Right. Whereas the confidence and moxie and swagger that I'm talking about with this group is, oh man, when we don't give up points and then we go give our offense the football, I feel like they're not playing off each other, where it's like, if we give that offense, our offense, as explosive as they can be, the football, you know, on a short field, it's going to be 7. And then we go do that again. And then it's 14. And then all of a sudden it's like, you kind of have that football team because they have to, you've basically eradicated the run. So it's like it's screen game, quick game, down the field passing game, and it plays right into the hand for Jim Knowles with, you know, these pass rushes and some of these exotic blitzes. And to your point about having that middle of field safety as kind of like the umbrella over the field, not that he's going to make every play, but he's going to show up with that football in the air and not leave those corners and nickels on the island as much as they had been earlier in the season. There's a confidence about that when we go get a stop, our offense will score. And when we go stop, score, like, there's no way that team, whoever it is, whether it's Oregon or Tennessee or Michigan, whomever, up 14, that's going to go down the field on us and down the field on us and go get those points without us getting that stop when we need it or a turnover when we need it.
Yeah, this is – I meant to ask some of the Ohio State players. I wanted to ask them this question on the defense. Maybe I'll get another chance next week. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Before they play the winner of Texas and Arizona State in the Cotton Bowl. But when Mark D'Antonio would send a call in, you know, when y'all would get your call in from the sideline, did it immediately click in your brain what was coming, what he anticipated was coming? You understand what I'm saying? Because you never ever totally know. But how often was he right? Just because I would think the call comes in and you being the middle linebacker, you're going, okay, this is what he anticipates. That's why we're in this, et cetera, because you can't have that extended conversation, obviously.
Sure.
Explain to people what that's like when you're getting the call in defensively. You're already saying, okay, this is what is anticipated, but she's still got to be on guard, right?
Yeah, of course. So, like, so to your point, like, not all 11 players might have that anticipatory thought of, well, what's Coach D'Antonio thinking when he calls right. this? The defensive line guys just kind of put their hands down and do their job, right?
Yeah.
Now, the corners and safeties and back end, it's like if it's a specific call, you know, that's a little bit more vanilla, it could be, we don't know what's coming, but we're going to be in our base to be ready for it. Yeah. But then when you get into some of the, you know, the zone blitzes or the, you know, the man blitzes or zero blitzes where you're really like more attacking, it's we're coming from one side of the field or the other or up the middle strategically because maybe guard center guard struggle with, you know, that middle dog cross, you know, which would be like me and C Grant, you know, kind of wrapping up the middle, or we'd bring like a like a field blitz because we're going to, you know, they're going to go trips to the field. We're going to bring that blitz from the field and we're going to be able to disguise it very well. And we're going to have like runners coming downhill right in his face. And those, you know, the hot player is going to insert right to the read route, you know, that they're going to try to throw off of our blitz. Yes.
Right.
And or we'll come from the backside. You know, that's in many cases, it was Dustin coming on, you know, on a corner blitz, you know, with the ball on the boundary. So he doesn't have to come very far. And the quarterback, at least at that juncture, and they're so much further along now, you know, in their development, but a corner is not going to look into the boundary, into the single and throw hot into the boundary. He's going to look to throw to the field. And that's where we're loaded. You know, we're weak where the blitz is coming from. So there's just, and for me, the one gift that I had to be very quick about it is, you know, me having that ankle surgery between my junior year and my senior year, that ankle reconstruction, spending 6 weeks in a boot and missing spring ball, it allowed me as a player and as a leader and as the Mike linebacker to just learn football. And I mean, I'm talking like that advanced calculus, Mark D'Antonio level of football of, and I just, it allowed me to stand next to him, not in shoulder pads and a helmet, and go, why'd you call that, coach? What did you see? What are you anticipating? Why on this down and distance and not this down and distance? And I'd have those candid conversations that could happen in spring ball. And like my football IQ, you know, just grew to an immense level to the point where like, I got to what you're asking, which is like, I knew what D'Antonio, like he could go, Matt, you call the game. And I would go, you know, without also having to make the plays, I could call that game and understand why and maybe miss because I'm just a, you know, 20-year-old, not a, you know, 50-year-old calling plays with that, you know, 30 years of football experience. But like, but I could call a game and have a valid reason as to why I was anticipating run, you know, and because on this down and distance, on this hash, based on our study, this is what they do. And I wanted to, you know, bring that field blitz or that slant right to where they want to run the football. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Well then why'd you run coverage here? Well, you know, we watched all week on second and 12 plus, you know, after a run for a negative gain, they're always going to be a drop back pass. You know, that's what,
yeah. Yeah.
And you start to, and I think that's with all these third and fourth year guys starting on this defense, that's what you're getting. Like there's no surprises for these guys. And I think a second, you know, year two in Jim Knowles' defense, they've taken a massive step on the intellectual side of, instead of the whole monkey see, monkey do, just because he called it and he told me to do it, I do it. It's now right. You not only do it, but you do it anticipating what you saw on film and what you practiced all week.
When the offense comes to the line and they're in a formation, you didn't, even though with their personnel, they're in a formation you didn't anticipate. How often do you remember, changing, like if there was a blitz call, you know, A, B, C, or D, let's call them that instead of all the really crazy names y'all have for that stuff. How many times do you remember changing something on the field with C. Grant, you know, and Robert Reynolds and sure. those guys? I mean,
did so not very often, because yeah. The really good defenses that are sound on all three levels, you can survive a down. So if they come out in something, you know, all you just go back to your technique, you play your eye discipline and your proper footwork and proper alignment, and just go play that defense that's called against this look that you've never seen before, and you survive. Yeah. Just don't give up the explosive, right? Don't give up the explosive. Yeah. Don't give up the touchdown. Don't give up the chunk play, right? And just, okay, so it goes for 6 yards. You're like, phew, okay. You know, but then you also know then at halftime or quarter break that they're going to come back to that again or have another level or layer off of that play, so that you survive the down many times. But then there's also like we used to call them like hands checks. And when you see guys, you know, something happens on offense or in defense, the defense, everybody just starts shaking their hands, and that means everybody goes to the one blanket call. Everybody's playing one thing, because in some cases with so many shifts and motions and chess piecing, you know, talented players around, you can just say every time Jeremiah Smith's lined up in the slot, we're going to hands check and we're going to go to cover four to make sure that there's a massive umbrella, because that's when he's going to take the top off the defense and they're going to try to go or whatever it is, right? I'm using that as an example.
That's a great example.
You hands check into something based on your film study, and it's just a – and again, it by itself is a blanket, all 11 on the same page, survive the down, and then, you know, get back into the flow on the next play.
Yeah. Do you remember the actual name or, you know, moniker y'all used for the call on fourth down at the goal line when C. Grant came off the edge and forced
Tight Will Tulsa cover six. And I actually, funny is I found the actual, I still have the wristband with the call sheet that wore on my belt buckle of all the calls. And that's usually predominantly for if a team goes hurry up. And then that way D'Antonio can just go play number two. We all look down, play number two is, you know, Sam Bullets cover three, and everybody's playing Sam Bullets cover three. Instead of him having to signal it in and everybody look over, and then because I can't huddle and I can't tell all 11 people before they snap the football.
Right. Right. But as you look back on that, you know, you and I've talked a million times since then, heck, even right after the game and stuff, but was that literally as perfect a call in that moment? You understand what I'm saying? This is the way it worked out, right? But go ahead.
The gift about that call that not many people know, and actually I said this when on our, I think maybe our 20-year reunion, and Coach Stress gave me some shit for recalling it as vividly as I do. But I think that what a lot of people don't know about that call is Walter Payton's son, Willis McGahee, had been knocked out of the game. Okay.
Yeah.
Jared Payton. I think that Miami knew what we were going to bring once they saw walked up into the line.
Yeah,
they turned the protection one way, and the back is supposed to have the end man on the line away from where the line goes. Well, the line went one way, and the back went the same way, and C came unabated. So it really was a mental error, by the backup running back from Miami with the game on the line that brought C Grant free, because then otherwise. Line goes this way, back goes that way. Then C. Grant has to defeat a blocker, not come unabated to Ken Dorsey, which means shoot a jump ball to Kellen Winslow or Andre Johnson, you know, on Doss or Gamble or Fox or whomever could be the difference in a football game, you know, as talented as they were. Yeah. So it was a mental error by them, not so much the call by us.
God, just those names you just named, man. They're in Buckeye lore now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Along with Wilhelm. Hey, well, let's get to the end of this. And from the standpoint of what do you kind of anticipate on Wednesday afternoon in the Rose Bowl? Two teams that played each other. Both of them are a little bit different in a lot of ways. You know, Ohio State's offensive line is totally different than it was at the beginning of that game. And it started changing in that game when Josh Simmons got hurt, you know. And now their offensive line's on its, like, what I call it, this seventh iteration. You know, the only guy – I was talking with Josh Farr about that this, you know, last couple of days. The only guy who's in the same spot for all
is him, right?
Is him at right tackle. And but so it's both teams are a little bit different. They've got that Jordan Burch kid back, you know, the huge, massive defensive end who, you know,
missed our game first time around, right?
Yes, exactly. And I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, he's a difference maker, but. You know, you can't let that thought think, well, this guy's going to blow up everything, right? Because Josh Fryer is looking forward to the opportunity of playing against a guy like that. Obviously, you would, right? But what do you anticipate this thing's going to pivot on? What's your feel?
I'm going to go out on a limb and just call my shots. I think it's a Buckeye victory. I think it's going to be 0-0 at the end of the first quarter.
Wow.
But the ball has been moved. Just no one's been able to capitalize. And then I think there's going to be a little bit of a point explosion in the second quarter. And I'm going to say it's going to be like 17-10 or 17-7 at halftime Buckeyes.
Wow.
And then I think you're going to see, you know, Dan Lanning, you know, make some adjustments as a defensive guy. You're going to see the offensive coordinator, Will Stein, make some adjustments with Dylan Gabriel on what had not worked in the first half. We're going to see that flip on its head. And I think that Ryan Day and Chip Kelly also just keep Oregon guessing, you know, and keep being very efficient as an offense. Not only Will Howard efficient, but I'll say, and I think that's what like led the charge for me against Tennessee is the offense as a whole was extremely efficient. We were able to run the ball. And again, what was ingrained in our brain was the inability to run the ball against that team up north. And then all of a sudden we can run the ball against Tennessee and how different our offense looked and how it opens up the passing game and how confident Will Howard looks. And then when you marry, you know, the looks and the formations and the shifts and motions on the chess piecing that I always like to talk about with our Buckeyes, our talented football players, that means that that's the Terra Motion by Travion Bell. Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins to get that ball out to them. That's extension of the run game. That's a very, very, you know, high efficient, high percentage throw by Will Howard, but it moves the chains. You get 7 yards. Yep. It puts you in second and three. And I just think that I'm going to go, like, I'm going to say Buckeyes with like a 10-point victory in this football game, but I think they're just going to, like, they're going to be ahead by multiples, by the two scores most of the game. It might get to one. And then I think our defense gets the stop and our offense makes the play to get that next series of points and makes it a two-score game. And I think that Oregon's offense will roll down the field, as much as I hate to say it, but they're just going to run out of football game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because of the efficiency of our offense.
Yeah. That was the one thing Ohio State, and it had several chances to make it a two score game in their first meeting. Yeah. And by hook or crook, they couldn't get it done. And,
correct.
You know, and the instance, if you could make it a two score game, it changes everything. I wanted to ask you this in a microcosm, when you've gone against a quarterback like Dillon Gabriel, you know, his little escape moves now, but he's still really good, even if you know about it. But what is it as like Cody Simon and then those guys up front and also Sonny Styles? But what do they have to – do you often always have to have that little nagging thought in the back of your head, but what if this guy takes off? You understand what I'm saying?
Of course, absolutely.
But does it change your aggressiveness, you know, at the outset? Go ahead.
It actually does in the early portions of the game. And then eventually you get back to who you are and you get, you know, you defeat the player in front of you and you let it grip and you get aggressive.
Start playing.
But I think the other thing in both high school, college, and professional career is whomever Ohio State has had playing Dillon Gabriel in practice as a practice squad guy or like the look squad. I don't mean practice squad as a look squad guy and mimicking and basically showing, this is what we would do. We would show him Dillon Gabriel and how he likes to escape. Right. And then when he gets out in practice and you show him the card and we're going to go, okay, don't throw it, take off and run, you know, and escape like Dillon does. And then it's, if it's up and then out, or if it's out to get to you to create the void in the middle and then back inside, or if he likes to roll over his back shoulder, you know, and double back over whatever those nuances are. I really hope that whomever played the scout team version of Dillon Gabriel this week gave us a great look as a plus. And again, it could be a receiver who comes in and does it almost like a wildcat. Like his intention is really not to throw. It's just to make those guys up front work their technique, either get aggressive and win and go get him to the ground, or hands on strike, separate and kind of, you know, fend off the offensive player and wait for Dillon Gabriel to either A, throw the football, or if he tucks it, you can then shed and, you know, kind of get in and get a hit or get, you know, grab some cloth and get Dillon Gabriel to the ground before he can escape.
Does it matter that he's left-handed? How does that change your pursuit? Obviously, like you just indicated earlier, you know, he would much rather roll left than right, probably. Right?
Correct. Yes.
And you always have to have that in the back of your mind also. That was key, like you said, to preparation. I think Aaron Nolan actually has left now because he's going.
He would have been the perfect Dillon Gabriel.
Correct. Correct. But how do you keep those little different thoughts in your head? You know what I mean? Compared to who you
went. It does change. And I think that's part of the preparation of, you know, the offense and actually the offense and defensive staff working together, you know, with the scout team players to mimic that look. And to your point, it's, you kind of break a lot of tendencies in your brain because, you know, it's dash left, it's waggle left, it's start boot to the right, roll over your shoulder and boot back left off a play action faked, which is, you know, and then it's also, for the defensive back standpoint, it's then you're like, you know, if once he dashes or rolls out to the left, it's really kind of like playing half the field. And it's usually the half the field that you're not used to playing because you're used to playing the other half of the field with right-hand quarterback. So it's almost like, and I'm not trying to like make it, but like if you worked on your golf swing, it's all about muscle memory. And if you've done it enough, you know, and you make one little tweak, and if you practice it enough 5, 6, 7 days in a row, which is what these guys have done in preparation to play Oregon, that nuance that you're so accustomed to, you have broken that tendency and learned that new way, you know, for Dillon Gabriel. And what's great about it is, you know, you go out, you execute it, you can unforget it if we win and go right back to all that you know, which is a right-handed quarterback most likely against Texas or Arizona State.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for all defensive players, I'd like to say four. Because it's funny how even the most polar opposite sports have so many things in common when you really think about it, right? I mean, it is the mental game more than it becomes the physical game, and that'll be big for Ohio State. Hey, last thing, like you and I talked about before, y'all could get up for Miami. You knew that was it. Just leave it all on the line. That's the way the approach has to be on Monday. On, excuse me, I'm getting the day wrong. On Wednesday afternoon for Ohio State. And if it does and it wins, you got to do that all over again. I mean, how crazy is this for a college football team, do you think? I mean, obviously, it's been two games to a championship the last 10 years. Now it's four games to a championship for Ohio State. Just, you can't ever forget you got to play a game next week, can you?
Correct. Well, you're not guaranteed anything if you don't take care of the business that's right in front of you. So correct. I think that's the challenge, is like, you don't, and I think more so than anything, the fact that the team that we're playing, it probably sets up perfectly from a mental standpoint that this is a team that we've already played and a team that has already beat us and a team that, you know, that we undo a lot of things by beating this football team. And that's, again, to me personally, it's like maybe staking claim on the entire Big Ten, you know. Unless we play Penn State again, potentially in the national championship, which, you know, is really that opportunity to stake your claim as the Big Ten, like, era of all its own, right?
That would be crazy, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It would be crazy, but it is possible. So I think that there are too many, like, honed in arrows pointing at Oregon. You know, first year in the Big Ten, going undefeated, basically taking over your conference, I'll call it, you know, if you're a Buckeye. And the fact that they've beaten you, I think, I know I've seen just little clips of Will Howard talking about having that last play back or last, I don't know, two plays back from a sequencing standpoint and undoing that. So there are enough motivating factors, for you to have to go focus on this game before you think about ever playing a second one, because you're not guaranteed it. Because if you don't take care of business, it's non-existent and you're going to be on the couch with you and I, watching those football games.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Matt Wilhelm, who's won a Super Bowl, won a national championship. He's favoring Ohio State in this game. It's not a big surprise because he's got a big O. He's got a huge O tattooed on his chest, if you could actually see it. But, hey, Matt, we're going to be back next week one way or the other, man, either wrapping things up or looking forward to the Cotton Bowl. But, man.
We're going to be looking forward. We got to undo a Cotton Bowl woe, too. From last year against Missouri.
Yeah. Ooh. I mean, this is the second chance. This is going to be known as a second chance mini season for Ohio State, getting a second final home game for the seniors, getting a second shot at Oregon, getting a second shot at the Cotton Bowl where they were so embarrassed a year ago. And if they win there, getting to play in the Mercedes-Benz Dome again, where they came oh so close to beating Georgia 3 years ago. I mean, it's all right there in front of them. All they got to do is go win, right?
It is. And those roses have looked beautiful behind your head the entire time, Tim. So it's set up perfectly for us today.
I feel like I'm on a tournament of roses.
A float
right now. But, hey, Matt, I'll see you next week, man. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you then. And until then, thanks for joining us.